Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Andy, at the time, I'm going to say, was 30 going on 50? How old's Andy now?
Yeah.
I mean, Andy was 50s. The oldest 30-year-old I had ever met, but just always had
without
a minute
ego. Without
to
ego.
Teach you.
If he was there, if he was there to be my sidekick, that's all
right.
He would. I mean, he was so supportive
and
so loyal and supportive.
And the touch of, absolutely the touch of an axe murderer.
Yes.
When it came to sort of like helping you out or sharing his opinion.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
And so plausibly live from a still undisclosed third floor location in Chevy Chase, Maryland, we are on the air with Chris Saliza and Michael Kornheiser, and Nigel will do news and run the board. This show will drop today at 11 o'clock Eastern and 8 o'clock Pacific. I just say that in case something happens to the country. Like, I didn't know.
Okay? Day one.
I didn't really know. So we need to start with, I think, what Bill Belichick has already said and will say again a lot. It's on to Houston. These were not great games. They had great moments. Wilbon will be on later and will tell you the games were terrible and attempt to switch the conversation to the NBA. And Wilbon will be allowed to do that in his segment. But in this segment, we're going to talk about the football games. There were magnificent performances yesterday by Tom Brady and Matt Ryan. And Aaron Rodgers wasn't half bad. And Ben Roethlisberger did everything he could, particularly in the first half, to keep his team involved. At one point, he completed like 13 or 14 passes. They just, Pittsburgh's problem, they had a number of problems. One was that Le'Veon Bell was hurt early and only had 6 carries. Their other problem was the same thing you could see last week when they got into the red zone 4 times and inside the 25 7 times and never scored a touchdown. The fire has gone out of their short-range offense. They had a touchdown early, then they missed the extra point, but they just, there were 2 incidents. That the game was over, and this game was over a lot later than the first game was over, believe me. But the game was over twice. The New England Patriots were playing defense inside their own 2. Inside their own 2 for 8 downs, right? 8 downs. And no scores, no touchdowns by Pittsburgh. Once a field goal and once you had to go on 4th because you're down 3 scores at that point.
Yep.
And you can't get into the end zone. It doesn't, it just doesn't happen. On the one that, on the 4th down, when he threw a pass out into the flat, even if it was caught, he was going to be tackled.
He was going to get caught short. That's
so
right.
Whoever,
it was to Eli Rogers, I think, and he was going to be short.
Whoever their offensive coordinator is, he's Todd Haley, right?
I'm not Kansas City Chiefs head coach.
I'm not smart enough to knock Todd Haley, but something's wrong there when they are in a compressed field situation. They're going against Tom Brady, who is 32 of 42 for 384 and 3 touchdowns, and these statistics that I'm going to give you now are absolutely mind-blowing statistics. This is Tom Brady versus Mike Tomlin, and Mike Tomlin alone is the coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers. He's 6-1 with 22 touchdowns and no picks. Do you like that? Is that something I could interest you in? 22 touchdowns and no picks.
That's amazing.
He is throwing to people, some of whom did not play the position in college or did not play college. Did not play. Chris Hogan was a lacrosse player at Penn State. He played 1 year of football at mighty Monmouth College.
I mean, that's like playing a year of football at Georgetown. You know what I mean? Like, come on, man. Like,
you know,
how is that guy in the NFL?
Edelman has been in the league for 8 or 9 years now. He's 5'11". He was a quarterback at Kent State. Danny Amendola, who usually starts, doesn't start now because he has to get ready to help Santa Claus for next year.
He's
5'2".
How does 9 for 180 and 2 touches
Chris
for Hogan,
and
8 for 118 and a touchdown for Edelman? Unbelievable.
And we're forgetting the touchdown that Hogan dropped in the 4th quarter.
If those 2 guys walk by you on the street, you have no idea that they're football players.
This is
unbelievable.
This is what I said. I believe I said this on Friday when I was talking about Steve Young's comparison of Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. Did I talk about this? I think
you
did. In which Steve Young said that Aaron Rodgers represents art and Tom Brady represents science. and how I mistakenly thought that he preferred Aaron Rodgers because of the improvisational nature to Aaron Rodgers, and because he was, Steve Young was that kind of quarterback. And he said, no, no, no. What Tom Brady does is harder because he has less to work with. Because he, and you saw it in the first series, he went down before they could get to him in the first series, and you thought, oh my God, it's going to be that game. They were up 3-0, and then he went down, and you said, it's going to be that game, and then it wasn't. And then on one of the passes to Hogan, he had an hour. He had an hour.
And Hogan was there was nobody on the half of the end zone where Hogan was when he caught the pass.
And with that time, I was just thinking about last year's AFC Championship game where he couldn't get any of these
against Denver.
Off. Yeah.
Or against Denver.
And Miller was there all the time.
He couldn't do it. He could not do it. So all of the people who suggested, as Ron Jaworski suggested, that if you try to defend with a zone against Brady, you will lose. They were all right. But I don't know how you ask the Pittsburgh Steelers defense, which has been this defense for X amount of time, to change for one game. The only person that can change everything for one game is the guy on the other side. It's Belichick. He can change everything. At one point in the game, they had one rush and 14 passes. Yep. And it was Sims and Nance. And normally they would be appalled. And they said, oh, no, no, no. That's, you know, there are games like this. Because they have watched Tom Brady and Bill Belichick win so often that they accept that their game plan is different. What I did not know, and which my eyes tell me I'm not sure of, is that the New England Patriots defense is that good. Because it's never been that good. Never. And now it's number one in points allowed and number four in yards allowed. And so you look at Atlanta, and obviously Atlanta is on the other side here. Atlanta's offense is the number one offense in the league. There is some thought that I have, and it's small, some thought that I have, because I've seen this before. I think we all know that Kyle Shanahan is going to become the coach of the San Francisco 49ers. And I know that we'll all hear Kyle Shanahan say, I'm in with these guys until it's over. It's only 2 weeks. I'm in with these guys. Somehow it doesn't always happen that way, that you lose a little bit of devotion because you have other things that you know you're going to have to do and you find your mind wandering. They have the best offense in football. I would have told you, and I will shut up in a second and turn to the others, I would have told you that, these are the two best offenses in football and it'll be a 45-41 game because their defenses aren't any good. Well, it turns out New England's defense is a lot better than I thought, so maybe this gives New England an advantage. Aaron Rodgers didn't have a chance. It was 31-0. Yeah, it was 24-0 at the half. This was the day you run out of luck. And Michael can tell you this because we watched the field. It's only 10-0, and Mason Crosby misses a field goal right. And what did we say?
We said the game was over.
Game was over. And then within a minute, the fullback fumbles the ball inside the five. It was not their day. They had three picks. They could have gotten these balls, and they didn't get those. So when you're down 24-0 at the half, and then you're down 31-0.
I mean,
it's over. Aaron
Rodgers.
They just
couldn't stop. They
can't do it.
They basically had to score. To win the game, they'd have to score in every possession. I mean, because the Atlanta offense could not be. I mean, it wasn't even close to being stopped. They're just running rampant all over them. I mean, the guys are wide open.
They got Julio Jones.
Julio Jones had one of the greatest catches you'll see yesterday when he goes up for it and he's rolling over another defender on his way back down.
Yeah.
And when I first watched this, it was easy for me to say, the luck runs out. This is sort of the Cinderella story. It was eight games. It was going to expire eventually. And I now have to admit that I'm a believer in Matt Ryan. You look at what he did yesterday, and I think we all have to give him that credit now.
He was great.
By the way, the eight-game winning streak went, and the nine-game winning streak went. And both home teams won, so Jaws was 2-0.
Ryan,
obviously.
27 for 38. Four touchdowns.
392.
He's now thrown seven touchdowns, no
Andy
interceptions.
Ran for one.
Right. I mean,
when you are the great statistic in passing is if you average 10 yards per attempt, you're a god because you're going to miss some of these, not per reception, per attempt. He had 38 attempts, 392 yards. Brady, who's the greatest quarterback of all time, Brady had 42 attempts and 384. That's great. And it's Ryan was better.
Right. Yep.
As you're watching, you're thinking.
Did you see my favorite part of either game? And you probably didn't see it, but did you see? I saw it on the internet. Did you see when Belichick is given the Lamar Hunt Trophy for winning.
He doesn't even
AFC.
Care about it. He doesn't even want to hold
it. His disdain.
His total disdain
his
for
utter
this.
Disdain. I mean, look at him.
Yeah.
He can't even fake it.
For this?
He looks like he wants to take it and throw it in the trash.
Just, it's so meaningless.
I love hate that dude more than any. Like, no, he's a
terrible person.
But they're just to your point, Tony, about the different game plans. Last week, a ton of Deion Lewis. Deion Lewis running, Deion Lewis. Today, Sunday.
Nothing.
Almost nothing, Deion Lewis. Look, LeGarrette Blount has like 15 carries for 40. He barely played in the last game. And yet these guys come out there and they perform. You know, it's every guy they put out there. You're like, this guy? And 55 yards, 6 yards. LeGarrette Blount had that run.
I have no idea if any of them like Bill Belichick. I don't find him likable. But I would swear on a stack of Bibles that they adore his intellect and believe in him 100%. Sure. That if Bill Belichick said, I want you to go out there just wearing jockey shorts and we're going to throw you the ball 19 times. It's okay, right? It's his game plans vary game to game. No, that doesn't happen with anybody. He's brilliant.
It's a small, cool DC moment for me last night. This was late in the fourth quarter. You're wondering, why is Tom Brady still in this game? And you see a few Steeler defenders wrap him up, and they say the name Sean Davis, who is a safety for the Steelers, who is a Murray graduate and also played football at UMD.
Oh, is that right?
So that the game all of a sudden got very interesting for me at the end. And I was sitting there in the late third thinking, I cannot believe that it took seven quarters for the Patriots to give up a 30-plus yard play against themselves.
It's amazing.
Surprising.
Because we were talking about this off air, but you literally can't name anyone on the defense.
Malcolm Butler.
Because of the Super Bowl.
Rob Ninkovic, because he was out because he was a steroid eater.
Like,
and that's all. Now, who else can you name? Nobody. Can't name anybody. They are that good. The interesting philosophical question becomes this. Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, this is their seventh Super Bowl. That's more than anybody. Nobody would argue with you if you said Bill Belichick is the greatest NFL coach of all time and Tom Brady is the greatest NFL quarterback of all time. I mean, you can't get an argument. People say, well, I think it's Unitas or I think it's Montana. Fine, but there's no passion to the argument because you cannot discount either of them. If he loses this Super Bowl and becomes 4-3, does that hurt his legacy? Because he trends down towards Greg Maddux. What do you think?
I think this would be the first one where it actually would. I think those Giants losses are in a different category just for
the way they were accomplished.
The way the Giants went through the postseason and the just sort of the momentum they carried.
Third and 100 play in each one.
Now, if you see Matt Ryan put up this kind of performance in 2 weeks with the ability to spread the ball
They're
to
not
every
lose.
Single receiver,
they can't
you
lose.
Can't stop him.
No, you can't lose. What do you think?
I think that his legacy is cemented no matter what. I don't think he trends downward even if they lose. I you're just looking at sustained greatness at a time and in a sport in which sustained greatness is extremely hard to achieve. The Carolina Panthers did not make the playoffs this year after going 15-1. And the other thing is, to be honest, okay, let's say they lose. Who would you put as a favorite in the AFC to make the Super Bowl next year? I'll give you one guess.
Patriots.
I mean, until the guy shows some. Belichick, you assume, is there for as long as Brady is there, I would assume.
Yeah, sure.
Until Brady shows some sign of getting markedly worse, which he's just not, I don't know how you don't put them there every year because you have the best coach and the best quarterback.
This is how I feel, and I'll go back to what Chris was saying on the disdain in Belichick's eyes for this newly created stupid-looking trophy for the AFC Championship. From the beginning of the season, all I wanted was in New England to win. And I'm not a New England fan. I'm not. Ugh. Because Roger Goodell, I felt, had outrageously punished Tom Brady as a way to get back to Bill Belichick.
And there were chance of Roger last night in Foxborough.
Right. And he has avoided this, and now he has to go to the Super Bowl.
You would think.
And I want them to win.
there might be another championship game.
I have no
cricket
axe to
somewhere.
Grind against Atlanta whatsoever. But the right story is Roger Goodell has to hand the one trophy that Belichick wants to Belichick and Brady and Kraft, and they can just look at him, look at him, and their look will say, I wish you would die soon. We will take a break. When we come back, Michael Wilbon will join us. I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Indochino ad. Nigel has these suits.
That's right.
And loves these suits. Just give a little bit of your experience.
These are great suits. I got the first one. I was in a wedding, and the groomsman, the groom was like, hey, this is going to be the groomsman suit. And I was dubious of, like, I'm going to measure myself. And I ended up doing it, as now famously, with a piece of rope and a yardstick.
Yes.
And thought it would come out miserably, and it fit me like a glove. You all have seen the suit. Oh. It fits me perfectly, and it looks great. I loved it so much, I bought another one.
There you go.
So I love
it. This is testimony.
Yes.
And then there's like, I can't do this because I don't have an Indochino suit. But you do.
Yes. Yes. And I will
and
be
Chris
purchasing another one.
Chris has said he wanted an Indochino suit.
I'm interested. I like a lot of people in politics who won't go named wear very ill-fitting suits, whether purposely or not. And, you know, I just feel like if you're a man in your 40s, 50s, you need to have a suit that fits.
Right. Indochino is one of the largest made-to-measure menswear brands. You get a high-quality suit made to your exact measurements for a perfect fit. You also get to customize your suit just the way you want it. Here's how it works. You visit a showroom or you shop online at Indochino.com. You can pick from hundreds of fabrics. You can choose your customizations from lapels to pleats to jacket linings and more. You submit your body measurements. You place your order, and within 4 weeks, it arrives, and it's perfect. This week, my listeners can get any premium Indochino suit for just $389 at Indochino.com when entering Tony K at checkout. That is 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, your shipping is free. That is Indochino.com. The promo code is Tony K for any premium suit for just $389 and free shipping. Let me spell it, I-N-D-O-C-H-I-N-O, Indochino.com. It's an incredible deal for a suit that will fit you better than anything off the rack ever could.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Tom Lagana, and Tom writes, I was a sometimes guitar player for your beloved Roy Battelle and the Altones. Not a full-time member, but did a bunch of gigs with them, and Larry Boozer, the sax player, still tunes my piano, and yes, I have a piano, as well as with Sydney's Orchestras, two musical outfits I believe you know well indeed. Hopefully this gives me enough street cred for you to take a listen to my tracks. And these are from a release called Patuxent. This is Both Sides, a James Taylor-ish ballad, written for the woman who would become my wife, and this was the first dance. Also, he's performed a handful of times with the National and the Baltimore Symphony. So this is classy and
love
beautiful.
It.
This is really nice. And he plays in Michael Wilbon, who spoke to me last night in the middle of the New England game and announced both games stunk. And I tried to make the case that both games may have had large spreads to them, but they were spectacular performances, certainly by Ryan and by Brady. And I don't know how you feel about it. I'm sure you feel the same way. What Belichick and Brady do every week is over some unbelievable distance in a game. This is not a game where there's only five players. There's 22 guys out there on a team. It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, it's truly amazing.
Tony, they're the best at what they do. I mean, this is like watching, you know, I mean, you go through the history of sports in America and you can pinpoint brilliance. And, you know, it doesn't last forever. And maybe it, when it's extreme to this point, you know, whether you are talking about, I don't know, I mean, whether you're talking about the Yankees at some point in the 20s and then there was that stretch, you know, in the 90s when with Jeter and Torrey and Mariano Rivera, whether you're talking about the Celtics of the 60s or Phil Jackson's Bulls or, I mean, you know, you can go through sport.
The Canadians for a while in the 50s.
Canadians or Wayne Gretzky if you get more modern, if you want to come forward into the 80s. And you just, you look at it and you just sort of marvel at it that you get this sort of, and it is performance. You know, the playoffs to me have been a waste in terms of competitive games because there's only been one.
Yeah,
the one Rogers competitive game in the playoffs out of 10.
I thought there were two, but both with Rogers, but maybe not.
The other nine, no, they wasn't competitive. It wasn't close. It was a great performance by Rogers, but the game wasn't close. I mean, there's been one close game in the playoffs. 90% of the playoffs have been a waste. And so you have to take your enjoyment from, you know, these virtuoso performances by Brady and yeah, I mean, Matty Ice. I mean, I thought they would collapse and fall on their faces like they normally do, but they haven't done that, and it doesn't look like they will.
I mean, so I watch, and I want to make a case, like, why the games develop the way they do. Roethlisberger, in the first half, at one point, I think completed either 12 of 13 or 11 of 12, did everything that he could do, and yet it didn't result, as last week, Mike, it didn't result in touchdowns. It didn't result in touchdowns, and Brady's going the other way. And you look at this and you go, I know, and he's beating a guy who's going to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And Mike Tomlin's a really good coach, regardless of what Terry Bradshaw says. Mike Tomlin's a really good coach. And Brady's record against Tomlin teams is 6-1 now with 22 touchdowns and no interceptions. And you go, how is that possible?
Well, because they're better. They're better. And it doesn't mean that Roethlisberger, to me, I'm not shining the light on him at all. The rest of the team wasn't up to it, just like in the other game. But the Packers, we can come up with a tangible reason because they were just battered, sick. They just weren't up to it physically. You know, at another time, might they have been? Maybe not. Maybe Atlanta. This is just Atlanta's year. They're just that much better than Green Bay. But Tony, the notion that there was going to be drama over Pittsburgh and New England, I didn't understand that. I mean, I understand it. You look at the two teams, and one team is just a lot better team. And then when you saw Pittsburgh, even though they advanced, like you said, they couldn't even score a touchdown in Kansas City. Well, if you can't score a touchdown against Kansas City, you're not going to beat the Patriots in New England. I don't care who your coach or quarterback are. The rest of the team was not up to it.
Well, I looked at that game, and I thought if there was a chance for an upset, I thought the better chance was Pittsburgh because I thought that Antonio Brown – was the best receiver in that game, and Le'Veon Bell was the best runner in that game. But then Le'Veon Bell only had six carries, and they were no good. In the Green Bay game, this really did not take a math major. Green Bay, as bad as Atlanta's pass defense was, Green Bay's was actually the worst in the league.
Yeah.
They were 32nd in the league, and when you watched Matt Ryan early, you went, oh, that's it. That's it. They were unstoppable by Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers, you could not win that game, right? You couldn't win it.
No, they couldn't. They're just a lot better at this point, Tony. When they walked on the field, I think one of the overanalyzed aspects of sports these days, massively overanalyzed and exaggerated, and it gets into places where the analysts, you know, just go wild with body language. And Tony, when they walked on the field and they played a series, it was like, oh no. Oh no, you people, you cheeseheads, you have nothing today.
Yeah.
You have no chance. The running back, they knew they were going to move the ball every snap. They knew they were superior. They played like they knew they were the superior team, and they were.
You looked at this, and not only was Atlanta better, and was Atlanta better at the thing that Green Bay was worst at, which is passing. But then Green Bay, you miss a field goal. You fumble inside the five after you carry three guys 9 yards. You have three different interceptions that are in your hands, and you do not pull them down. So that all the great luck that Aaron Rodgers has had over the year with Hail Marys, right, Mike, all that luck went away yesterday. It was gone.
Well, the other thing is Rodgers tried to do too much. And I understand his desire to think that he had to do this. The passes he threw downfield when they were moving the ball and they got picked, he didn't have to throw those passes. But again, he's looking at his team. He knows his guys are giving him everything they got. They don't have much.
Yeah.
He did too much. There was no reason to go down the field and get those passes picked off. And you really see that from Rodgers where he just sort of oversteps. You know, he's not staying in his lane. His lane is, God knows it's big. Tony, once that fumble –
yeah.
Occurred when the Packers
Ripkowski.
It would have been 10-7, I guess.
It was 10-0. It was 10-0.
So I'm saying it would have been 10-7.
It would have been 10-7, yeah.
Yeah, if they scored that touchdown. And you just go, you know what? This is over. Both those games were just over quickly. the superior team established itself and didn't take its foot off the gas.
So did you have any idea, and I really had no idea, because I've watched the Patriots for a lot of years, and their defense always seems okay, but it doesn't seem that good. Did you know they were first in the league in points allowed?
Yeah, 250 points allowed.
I had no idea.
That's why when you were going crazy in the middle of the season about how vulnerable the Patriots were, I was like, what are you talking about? They got the golden boy. They have a defense. And not only did the Gronkowski storyline get wildly exaggerated, I told you they had fleeced the Bears of Martellus Bennett, who is not an adequate tight end. He's a terrific tight end. He's not Gronkowski, but he doesn't need to be. They got Brady. And so, yes, their defense, I knew their defense allowed 250 points. One of the reasons that people, you know, stumped for Matty Ice's MVP is that he had to overcome his own bad defense, which Tom Brady didn't have to do. Matty Ice's defense gave up 406 points on the season. I think that was 32nd and last DFL, I think.
Well, no, so, Tom Brady didn't have to overcome his defense. He had to overcome the fact that his receivers are 5'3".
And you never heard of him. 5'3" every year.
And that's what he does every year, which is why he's the best.
So it doesn't matter.
it doesn't matter
how tall his receivers are. He could have six Muggsy Bogues. He's Tom Brady.
So you like them. I mean, we're going ahead 2 weeks.
I like them all the time. Until I see, did I like Bill Russell? I wasn't old enough. Would I have liked him, his team?
Yeah.
Did I like Michael Jordan's team? Yeah, I liked his team. I mean, did I like Wayne Gretzky's team? Yeah, I liked his team. I like the best team. The best team with the greatest player who is just on it, you know, in it, in the moment, playing great, not injured, not, you know, look, because something happened during the practice this week, I guess.
He's 40. You can't do it, right? You can't do it.
Yeah, he can do another year or two. Wow. Do it a little bit longer. It's going to catch him, too. But it ain't catching him in 2 weeks.
No.
It ain't catching him in Houston.
No, it's not. It's not. That could be. All right. It's 2 weeks away. We're not even going to talk about that. Let me shift gears, because I told you one of the things I really did want to talk about was your analysis of Russell Westbrook, who has been the most outstanding, certainly been the most outstanding player in the league so far this year, not getting voted to first team to start in the All-Star game for the West. Your thoughts on that?
Well, Tony, that's fans. It's a popularity contest. It didn't take any great analysis to me on this. I voted. I'm one of the media members who votes. Media accounts for 25% of the vote. Players account for 25%. Fans, 50%. Because that's what they want. The league wants to involve the fans.
And should. You know, it's a good idea.
But this is what the fans did. The fans voted. Because the fans don't necessarily like Russell Westbrook. They don't like the mean mugging. They don't like the chip on the shoulder. They don't like him kicking the ball away from another player in the middle of the court when the referee says, hand me the ball. Russell Westbrook wants to act like this. He wants to be a badass 24/7. That's fine. I defend his right to act that way. But then when you don't win a popularity contest, I don't want to hear it. And that's what this was. Fans said, no, we want the other guy. We want Steph Curry. We want the guy that may remind us of the next door neighbor or our son or the, you know, whomever, the paper boy, whatever. And so they voted for Russell. They voted against Russell Westbrook. This is a vote against Westbrook.
I would say that before anybody says take the fans out of the voting, remember that some of the players actually voted to start on the All-Star game. Michael Beasley got 6 votes.
Well, I think what that is about, Tony, is players want to have a certain player have no resistance, competition, and a category. And so they vote a fraudulent vote to get the guy they really want in. So in other words, if you're voting for forward and you think that, I don't even know where Beasley's playing now. I don't even know where
China,
Beasley is.
I think.
But let's just say he was in the Eastern Conference. I don't even think he is. Is it Milwaukee?
I think it's Milwaukee,
no
Mike.
No idea.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Let's say you want Jimmy Butler to be the third starting front court guy on the Eastern Conference team, and you're worried that there's actual resistance from somebody else. Let's say, I don't even know who at forward could be resistance. You would vote for Beasley because that would take a vote away from a legitimate guy who could challenge the guy you really want. So I think, I'm sure there's gamesmanship there. No active player, no retired player is going to argue that Michael Beasley is an all-star. But it's sort of a, really, this is the system you got? Okay, fine. Here's the guy who belongs in, and just in case, I'll help make sure.
Also,
so you're rigging the vote in that case. But Russell Westbrook, this is the fan. They said no.
Well, yeah, but the players vote. They hate the Golden State Warriors.
They dislike the Golden State Warriors.
Them.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, because there's no way that Klay Thompson is the eighth best guard in the West. And there's no way that Draymond Green is the ninth best big man in the West. There's no way. It's not possible.
They don't like them. They don't like them. They think they've gotten preferential treatment in all of the forums. In other words, fans and media. And therefore, that becomes a let's vote against him, too. So, look, it's an imperfect system. Westbrook is the glaring situation in this particular all-star vote because they sought to even it out by bringing in media and players.
Yeah, yeah.
It didn't happen. Westbrook will play. Westbrook will never pass the ball to anybody.
He'll be the MVP.
Because he's got to play with Warriors. No, I don't think he will be the MVP.
Oh, I think he'll score 30.
But I tell you this, you mentioned he's been the best player.
The most exciting player, yes.
He's been the most exciting.
Yeah.
But I will tell you this. The irony is...
Durant might be the best player.
I mean, look, Durant, Harden, and Westbrook, all three guys from the West, LeBron is going to finish no better, it seems to me, than fourth in the MVP voting. If these guys, all four of those guys stay healthy and they continue. I have an MVP vote. And if I was voting today for MVP, I think LeBron would be fourth. I'm sure he'd be fourth on my list.
That's reasonable to me. That's reasonable to me. Durant has accommodated his teammates, and his teammates have accommodated him. And when they're at their best, they're the best.
Yeah,
they're better than everybody.
The best season of his career.
They're better than everybody.
He's not just playing great. He's having the best season of his career. He's become a defensive stalwart on a team that was in desperate need after trading away.
Yeah.
His best defensive players of that thing, and he's been producing it.
All right, I'll see you later.
All right, Tom.
Michael Wilbon, boys and girls. You'll all see him later, too. I'll see him actually later. You'll see him on TV later. We need you to watch our ratings. We're cratering. I don't know that we'll get 16 years in.
It's like Friday.
Yeah. it's like our Friday show. We will come back with news, take a short break. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find qualified and quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites, and now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 200-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by Fortune 100 companies and thousands of small and medium-sized businesses. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. One more time to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/Tony.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Trapped, stuck on a rock. This is where I end up.
This is Emerson Sieverts, who writes, keep playing it. I'm a Virginia-raised recent transplant to Manhattan, currently finding as a freelance choral musician in the city. He can sing. You can hear this. I moved up here to pursue my dream of staging my musical Me, Prometheus, Caveman Love Story, which I co-authored with my friend Simon. Upon sharing our publicity material with my dad, a fellow Little, he suggested I send in a tune for the jingle portion of the new podcast, which keeps me connected to the area I still call home while traversing the streets of Manhattan. The show was a wacky prehistoric romp about the discovery of fire.
I've always
wanted that.
I'm in. We were just talking about that.
Using temporal distance as a device for social commentary, the show critiques society's unwillingness to adapt and eternal dichotomy of opposition between religion and science told through the prism of the lovable Gurg tribe. I'll invest.
A lot of unknowable words in there.
I will invest. Sausage Jack.
I love this. The show's titular number takes place when the hero, Herbert, discoverer of fire, is blamed for burning down the Gurg's home, Tribe Square, although he did nothing more than share his discovery with his people. They sentence him to ceremonial death by eagle on a rock, where he sings Meet Prometheus to vent his frustrations. It's more Lin-Manuel Miranda than Jason Fuse, but I thought it still might fit into the pod. And he signs it Lachiza. It's great.
How great is that?
It's great. We're
so
happy
about
that.
So that will be 2017's Hamilton. Is that what
we're hoping? Yes. We're hoping, because I've wondered about the Gurgs.
You often
not
say.
Not the Burbs.
The Gurgs.
The Gurgs.
Reach out
by
to Greg Garcia. This could be his next project.
Yes, that's a great point.
So I played golf over the week. I played both days. I played Saturday and Sunday, damp, foggy each day, a little drizzle, but a nice walk.
Right. 59,
a nice walk.
63.
No, those weren't even the temperatures. The temperatures were about 48 to 52. No, the Saturday I probably shot right around 100, and yesterday like right around 90. So I did better the second day.
But how fast do you play?
Yesterday I played in a twosome, walking the entire course in 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Holy cow.
Couldn't have been better.
At that speed, you don't even care what you shoot.
No, you go up to your shot and hit it.
Did you stop to swing, or did you just
keep
walking?
No, it was comfortable. It was totally comfortable. It was the way to go. So I played on Saturday. One of the people I played with was Kip Sheeman. And Kip wanted me to remind people that, A, he is still alive, of course, which we knew. But, B, he said that if you're in the Washington, D.C. area, there is a nor'easter affecting the East Coast. And he said, if this was snow and not rain, it's 3 feet.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. It's 3 feet. And it was around this time last year that we got the huge snow, I think.
It was this past weekend.
Yeah. So, well, which melted very quickly because February is very warm. And also, Kip said, keep an eye out on Super Bowl Sunday. That could be the big one. That could be the big
See,
one.
See, this
Super
is the forecasting that he loves to do.
You were probably awake because it woke me up, but the wind this morning.
Yeah,
very.
I was up.
Very
windy. I was up.
Really?
So today you would
That's
not be able
worse.
To play. Today you would not be able to play, right?
No. Today.
I'll be flying today, confirming all of your worst fears.
Yeah, I just can't do that.
Don't worry, I have my airplane suit on.
Okay, that's good.
You have some
talismans?
Yes, I have an amulet in my pocket.
Do you have some news?
I do indeed, Mr. Tony. We will start out.
Can I also say we need a name for the restaurant? By the way,
business class. I thought we decided this.
No, yeah. Nobody wants it.
First class.
Me. Nobody wants these things.
That's too
me.
Classy.
So I went over there on Saturday afternoon, about between 4 and 5.
Right.
And there was a really big crowd, because of the march.
Oh,
sure. Because of the women's march. They were done marching, and they went in. And
right
they
by
had,
a metro.
Yeah, I mean. And we did very, very well. I don't know how we did on Saturday night, but Saturday day we did very well. And then I told the guys there that on Sunday you put the sound up for the football games, because they'd been not putting the sound up for the football games. Said you put the sound up for the football games. And if that drags people out of the dining area and into the bar area, so be it.
Right.
But you put the sound up. So anyway, that's
You're a
me.
Great manager.
I think I am.
Well, people got to hear the game, right?
I want people to hear the game. I wouldn't put the sound up for, say, Georgetown.
Wow.
No Georgetown lost
right
yesterday.
In the teeth.
Yeah, they lose to Xavier, as Phil's mom would say. Yeah. It was tied 58 all at one point, and I think they ended up losing by about 10 or 15
they
or something
were never,
like that.
Binghamton won
six.
Its first league game.
How about that?
And we beat the dreaded, horrifying Seawolves of Stony Brook, and I'm so glad we beat them, because I hate Stony Brook.
Yes,
I loathe Stony
you
Brook.
You really do.
Well, we're only 1-5 in league, which is,
well,
gives
better
us a better...
better than Georgetown.
Yes,
Stony Brook is your Syracuse.
I hate Stony Brook,
so that's a good
let me
for
just
you.
Let me just point out that Georgetown has not won a Big East league game against a team other than DePaul or St. John's in 17 straight games.
And those two teams are ghosts.
Yeah.
DePaul
I mean,
and St.
I mean,
John's are ghosts.
Bottom feeding.
Yes, absolutely.
Going to the Redskins, Mr. Tony, they have made one hire and are working to make another hire for their coordinator positions. They've promoted from within, and they're looking within for both of these positions. Linebacker coach Greg Minuski will now be the defensive coordinator, and they're looking to promote quarterbacks coach Matt Kavanaugh to be their offensive coordinator.
Can I ask a question here that I don't know the answer, but it's a sort of a leading question.
Okay.
Does it seem to you, as it seems to me, that when you promote from within, you're saving money? That you don't have to, hit the higher number when you bring
them in. Yeah, I think there's that, and I think they definitely went out to try and find another defensive coordinator, and were buffed by a few blokes.
Really?
Yeah.
It seems more of a recognition that they were not wanted by their parties that they wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Gus Bradley went to
the Rams,
the Los Angeles Chargers, or whatever.
Oh,
right?
Not the Rams.
I think he went with Anthony Lynn.
Okay, that's the Chargers. Yeah. Because I have this these statistics that are provided courtesy of the newspaper today.
All right.
That Minuski has been a defensive coordinator in the past.
He has.
And that his teams average a ranking of 17th in points allowed. That puts them a little bit under halfway because there are 32 teams in the league. And Matt Cavanaugh has been an offensive coordinator in the past. And his teams average 18th in scoring, just one step below what I just said about Minuski's teams. They are being promoted. Greg Minuski is the outside linebacker coach. He's not even the linebacker
coach. Not even the inside linebacker
coach. He's the outside linebacker coach. Are they that specialized in football? The outside linebacker coach?
Yes. Yeah, they are. Yes.
I mean,
are we optimistic about this? I'm not.
Why would you be? I think Michael's point is the right one.
Maybe they'll be great, but
I think when these openings come available, I listen to sports talk radio and it's always like, oh, you know who would be good? Rex Ryan or like whoever the hot name is, whatever, Gus Bradley. And I think it's based on a total misperception of how the Redskins are still viewed football wide, which is this is not a great, it's a better destination because they have been better, but Dan Snyder is still the owner. They have not been good consistently for a very long time. Many of these people are just not interested in taking these jobs.
I think you're allowed one or two misses, and then the story gets so out of control, it's easier to just contain it by taking somebody in-house. Even if it doesn't work out, you can control it in the 2 to 3 year cycle after that.
Very good day for David Reeves last Tuesday. He was hired to be the co-offensive coordinator and tight ends coach for Oregon. Bad day for him over the weekend. Saturday night, he was charged with driving under the influence, and according to the University of Oregon,
they're getting rid of him.
Yes, he's been placed on administrative leave, and the process to terminate his employment, which with cause, has commenced.
So now let us look at the University of Oregon for a second. This is a big-time program. This is a top-10 program. They competed for the national championship a couple of years ago. They fired their coach, Mark Helfrich. They fired him.
That's right.
Everybody thought it would be a great place for Chip Kelly to come back to, but he, for whatever reason, he said publicly he wasn't interested. They hired a guy named Willie Taggart from Central Florida or South Florida, one of those two schools.
USFF, yes, South Florida.
South Florida.
That's right.
And he brings with him a strength and conditioning coach who in the first workout with the players, the workout is so hard that three elite athletes are hospitalized for a week.
And in a condition in which
their skeletal tissue is breaking down.
And just careening through their bloodstream.
And he is suspended for a month. He's brought there personally by Taggart.
Right.
This guy is brought there personally by Taggart. And within weeks of getting a job, is arrested on a DUI. And they're just getting rid of this guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think they need to consider getting rid of Willie Taggart.
Already.
Yes.
He's not shown the greatest judgment in terms of his staff.
Look at his staff. This seems to me a guy who is this, saying, I'm going to show you how tough I can be because I come from a smaller program. I'm getting this great job. I'm going to out-tough everybody in the world. I think you have to consider saying, this hasn't worked. Here is some money. Go away.
You made me do those 2,000 up-downs when I was first on the show. It was brutal. Skeletal tissue everywhere.
Yeah, unbelievable. His hires, he's 0 for 2. The only two we've heard about, he's 0 for.
Yes,
all right?
Yes.
So maybe they're 0 for by hiring him. What else you got?
Do some NBA, Mr. Tony. Not a good day for the Lakers. They suffer their worst loss in franchise history.
Come on, man.
122-73, they fall to the Mavericks. This is the point totals they had in each quarter. 22, 11, 22, and 18. And this, I believe, was the year anniversary of Kobe getting 81.
10-year.
Oh, 10-year. I'm sorry.
10-year. They lost to a terrible team.
Yes, they did.
Find the record of Dallas.
15. Well, now it's 15 and 29.
They stink.
Terrible.
Okay? They may be the worst team in the West or close to it if the Lakers aren't. The Lakers, when they hired Luke Walton and got off to a pretty good start, everybody was ready to anoint Luke Walton as the greatest coach in the world. Luke Walton said after this game, I don't know what happened. They didn't even want to play.
No kidding.
Hey, what happened?
No
They didn't even want to play. So this is difficult. But you know who had a really good week? Golden State.
Yes.
Golden State beat Cleveland by 1,000 points. They beat Oklahoma City. They beat Houston. And they beat Orlando on the road. That's a really good week. Yep. They're a really good team.
Golden State. I mean, you may not like them. They're really good.
In the Orlando game, Steph and Klay Thompson both made 7 threes. So that's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, 42 right now.
Orlando's
off the bat.
Nothing, but you just beat some very good teams. You beat some very good teams, so you could have faltered against Orlando. Do you have anything else?
I do. Some sad news coming out of the Dominican Republic.
Yes, yes.
Royals pitcher Yordano Ventura was just 25. He died in a car accident.
One of their many relievers who helped them to a world championship a couple of years ago when they would start in the sixth inning.
Yep.
Yeah, he was a fiery guy, like 100-mile-an-hour fastball, not afraid to throw inside. I believe he was suspended for a number of games last year for throwing at Machado.
Oh, absolutely.
And wasn't ashamed. He was like, yeah, of course I did that.
Yeah, no, it doesn't.
That's where I live, on the inside type of part of the plate.
I saw something. When this happened, there was a sort of a backstory on it, in which somebody from the Royals organization said, this was stunning to me, said, we tell all of our players, be very careful driving in the Dominican Republic. Be very careful. So I don't know, does this mean the roads
it
are
has
terrible?
Another guy died in the DR, another baseball player.
Yeah, Andy Monte.
And this is a single car accident.
Yes.
It has the highest vehicular, not homicide, it has the most vehicular deaths per capita of any country in the world,
is
I believe.
It, why?
It says in the Americas, it's the highest
the
traffic
Americas.
Accident death rate.
Why?
The rate of 29.3 per 100,000 inhabitants. I don't know, but I did
see.
Are
the roads really bad? Is the weather conditions really bad? Because this is a single car. This
right.
is
roads,
I've heard
I
the
believe.
Roads are bad and the way people drive. I did see Barry's Veluga tweet out, the scariest time I've ever had in my life was driving in the Dominican Republic. So clearly it has that reputation.
Costa Rica is up there as well in terms of danger. I've been there, and the roads, it's a lot of very narrow roads and a ton of big buses on those roads.
Okay, so,
and the regulation is not, and also a lot of people on mopeds, bikes.
This reminds me of driving the Amalfi Coast. You have tour buses that are trying to make a 45-degree turn. They stop. Someone gets out of the car to direct traffic.
Yeah.
And that's normal.
I mean, it's not like here we're like blocking the box. It's
and
like
that's
your greatest
why
sin.
I drive
Though
the interstate.
Though those people are annoying.
I'm on the interstate.
Yes.
4 and 5 lanes. That's what I like. We will take a break. We will come back with Old Guy Radio, and Howard Fineman will join us, the intergalactic editor of the Huffington Post, to comment on what's happened in the last 3 or 4 days with a new president.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day. Everybody knows what this song is.
The loveliness of Paris.
This is Tony Bennett, who recorded this song 55 years ago. This is I Left My Heart in San Francisco. In terms of critical commentary, I cannot think of any great artist so completely identified with one song. Like you'd say, well, Frank Sinatra, My Way. No, 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 no. 100 songs. Michael Jackson. No, not one song. Elvis Presley. No, not one song. This is the Tony Bennett catalog. This is number one all the time. I Left My Heart in San Francisco is absolutely Tony Bennett. And he's great, and he's had a lot of tunes. But this is number one. Can you think of anyone else?
Norman Greenbaum?
Yes, but he does not qualify.
Spinal Tap, Big Bottoms.
But it doesn't
Anthony
qualify.
Beeson.
Yeah. It doesn't qualify. So this is sort of amazing. I mean, because he's a great artist.
He is.
Anyway, Howard Fineman, the intergalactic editor of the Huffington Post, joins us now. We are the third day, although really the first day, according to the new president, to hit the ground sort of running 3 days late. But the obvious question, I'm going to get to specifics that they're going to have to do with alternative facts in a second, Howard. But where are we now with this new president? Where are we now?
First, Tony, let me say that the biased, dishonest media is saying today that the New England Patriots are the better team. typical.
Said by a Steeler fan.
Let me give you some alternative facts here.
Yeah.
Main one being number of Super Bowl victories, 6. Number of Super Bowl for the Steelers, number of Super Bowl victories for the Patriots, 4. As a matter of fact, the Patriots are mediocre. They're extremely mediocre.
When relative to the Steel Curtain Steelers.
Yes, extremely mediocre. They're 4-4 in Super Bowls, so you know that's fair 500. So I just wanted to set the record straight because I want to unify the country. I want solidarity, and so I'm issuing a decree saying that the Steelers are still the better team.
Good for you.
Whatever the result was yesterday.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
Reported by piles of stinking garbage media. Go ahead.
Where are we?
Where are we is in a place we've never really been before. I mean, I realized after this weekend, after going to the inauguration, and which was in a way a scary event, inspiring and scary, and being at some of the March stuff on Saturday, what Donald Trump is trying to do is edit out everything about our history and the presidency since Richard Nixon was popular in 1972 and stitch it together. And go directly from Richard Nixon then to Donald Trump now. Now, there are policy differences, of course, but in terms of attitude toward what the presidency is, I think that's where he is. I think he doesn't really care about the traditional calculus, which is that you literally try to unify the country. You try to reach out across the aisle. You try to work with everybody and bring everybody on board. He is running an insurgency. This is and he keeps calling it a movement. And the inauguration itself, and I was up there in my usual spot, you know, near the podium, and I've been to a lot of them. This was the first one that felt sort of like a hostile takeover. And Trump intended it that way, and he apparently is going to continue to operate that way. How far he can get with that, I don't know, but it's utterly unlike the operating methods of anybody we've seen before.
So let me get to where some of the controversy lies. It seems to me that it has started with the estimate of the crowd for the inauguration relative to the estimate of the crowds, which is a later fact, for the marches on Saturday and so on and so forth. It strikes me that this is just who cares? I mean, it just seems who cares how many people were at either, and now you have both sides of the aisle caring enormously, and Trump saying, and I've heard this. I heard this on, I guess it was Friday night at the night before the inauguration, maybe Thursday night, saying, you know, they said we couldn't have a concert here, and we do. Nobody said you couldn't have a concert, and they said nobody would come, and it's the greatest crowd ever. Well, you have it every year. I mean, why do you make the stand, and you're going to tell me, no, it's not about that, it's about something larger, and please do tell me that, but why do you make the stand on ratings? On ratings, why?
Well, first of all, the word smaller or small or less than, those words, less than, small, smaller, are like waving a giant, you know, red flag in front of Donald Trump. He's got to be the biggest, the best, the most popular, so it grates at his ego, number one. Number two, I think his attitude toward the media is one that was born and honed in New York, which is, and this applies to opponents of all kinds and also to the media, which is not necessarily an opponent, but which in his case is now, which is however hard they hit, you hit back twice as hard. And that's going to be his operating philosophy. And the other part of his operating philosophy is the way that he has always succeeded in business and in this campaign is by tearing down every opponent, by undermining the credibility and the power of every other opponent so that he is the last man standing. That's how he got to build a lot of buildings in New York. He became the only credible person who could do it because he undermined everybody else. And that's what he's out for here. So his attitude toward the media is a combination of how he prospered generally, which is tear everybody else down, and the hit back twice as hard thing. And beyond that, to get sort of vaguely philosophical about it, I mean, he wants to control the nature of public reality. He wants his version to be the only version. And he's not willing to countenance other versions that get in the way of his narrative.
Mm-hmm.
So you put all those things together, And when the reports came out about how the crowd wasn't as big as previous inaugurations, including Obama's, and it wasn't. I was there. Tony, I've been to all of these since 1988. And I'm not an expert crowd estimator, but I know what happens on the metro. I know what it feels like around the podium. I know what it is in the mall. This was a smaller crowd. And when people pointed it out, he went absolutely nuts. And he sent out Sean Spicer, his new press secretary, to get everybody into the press room on Friday. And we had a big fight over whether they were going to kick every, you know, move the press room out of the White House. Well, it turns out that they're going to keep the press room in the White House for the specific purpose of calling all the reporters there a bunch of lying jackals, which is what Spicer did, which is utterly different from how any other White House has ever started. But that was utterly indicative of the way the whole thing is going to run in terms of media relations and in terms of politics.
Can I get to, and I'm just to tell an old person story here. Mm-hmm. When I started as a sports writer in, 1970 or so, which is 1.5 million years ago, the advice I got, I'd not gone to journalism school, the advice I got from the editor of the paper that time at Newsday, Dick Clemente, the sports editor, was these are not your friends. They're not your friends. You're covering them. They let you in, but they don't want you to be there, and your job is to uncover the things under the rocks that they really don't want you to see. So if it's adversarial, when did journalists as a whole get so cozy that they look at this as, some horrifying thing that disturbs their birthright? Am I crazy?
No, that's what
I was told when I started.
That's a very good, very pertinent observation, and I think pretty profound. Yes, I agree with that. I agree with that. We are adversaries, and we're supposed to be adversaries. That's the way the founders set it up.
Absolutely.
The founders relied on the press to basically
keep
the
freedoms.
check on government. So
yeah.
We have a very adversarial role that the founders gave us in the Constitution and in their whole framework of analysis of how we could be a self-governing country. No, I absolutely agree with that. I think that's right. And I don't think we should whine about it. I agree with that. We shouldn't whine about it. I think what people like Chuck Todd and others were pointing out, though, was, look, if you're not going to accept facts as facts, how are we going to conduct this? And that's the thing. I think what Trump is and his people are trying to do is they're going to try to exhaust everybody on the whole question of what is a fact. And they're going to speak to their third of the country, and they're going to reinforce them, and they're going to take issue with everything else, and they're never going to concede an inch. Mm-hmm. And so I think the response of the press is not to go crazy about it, not to whine about it. You're absolutely right. And just put one foot in front of the other and report what we know as accurately as we can.
So
they're going to point out every mistake.
Yeah.
And they did, and they're entitled to. The press screwed up on a couple things. We screwed up on the pull report on the first day about whether they moved the Martin Luther King bust out of the White House. That turned out to be dead wrong. They're perfectly entitled to point that out. There was some talk that the CIA, the people in the CIA building who were cheering for Trump were not CIA employees, and they'd been bussed in as Trump stooges. That's not true. They were CIA employees. Yeah, were they going to clap for the new guy? Of course, but they were CIA employees. The White House pointed that out, and that's the way it's going
to
be.
So the new phrase is alternative facts, and I need to understand what this means. Does this mean if a fact is that 3 and 2 are 5, an alternative fact is 3 and 2 are 9? Is that and that counts too? That
well,
gets 50%?
Tony, that would take us all the way to George Orwell in 1984.
Yeah.
And I think that's one interpretation of it. To be generous about it, perhaps they're just saying, "No, here's some other facts." But okay. That wasn't what he was saying. As Sean Spicer was saying, this was the largest audience ever to view, taken in total, television, video, streaming, et cetera. This was the largest audience ever to view inauguration. That's just flat wrong.
Well, it could have been worldwide, don't you think? I mean, it could have been.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that that's wrong, though. But you're right. You know, that's not a bad point. Could be.
Could have been. So I have one other question, which is interesting to me. But
they want
maybe
to control the narrative, though, Tony, and they're perfectly entitled to try. And we just have to point out what's true and what isn't. Go ahead.
One of the things that was so disturbing about the presidency of Barack Obama was, for a while, John Boehner, but all the way through Mitch McConnell, all the way through, basically said, not giving him anything, nothing. We're gonna go to the mattresses on every single thing this guy wants. Is Chuck Schumer going to do that same thing with Donald Trump? I mean, because the Democrats for 8 years said, you're killing us. What are you doing here? This is not government. Are they going to do the same thing?
To a large extent, yes. I think. I think yes, and I think this comes at a time when the Democratic Party has no idea what it is, what it stands for, where it's going, and so forth. So the default setting is going to be to oppose Trump at virtually every turn, maybe on things like building roads and so forth. If it's federal spending as opposed to just tax credits, they might go along. They're going to approve most of the – they'll end up approving – the Senate will end up approving – most, if not all, of the cabinet members, but I think there'll be very few Democratic votes for any of them. Yeah, I think we're in a. My analogy is it's sort of where this is like the worst of the parliamentary system that they have in England and elsewhere, and the presidential system put together. It's all partisan division and no progress. It's sort of like if you take the House of Commons in the UK. And instead of having the benches facing each other, turn them around and have them face outward to their own constituencies, that's where we are. And this has taken a long time to get to this point. Trump, in a way, is a product of it. And Schumer has to respond to his own people. There were a million people out there in these various marches on Saturday. Virtually none of them want him to work with Donald Trump, and I think it's going to be very, very rocky all the way through. Good.
Thank you, Howard. See you soon. Thank you, Howard. Sorry about the Steelers.
Hey, that's all right. I told you about Mitchell in the secondary. I was right.
Yes.
They sucked him in on the flea flicker.
Yeah, it's just, it's no good.
All right,
thank
bye.
You, Howard. Howard Fineman, the intergalactic editor of the Huffington Post. I just don't understand why you make your stand on how many people were there. It's just so
even if
small.
No one is there,
he's still
literally
the
not one person.
Doesn't
you
matter.
Still have 4 years
You've
to be
won.
The president.
You won.
It's not dependent on that.
And by the way, the march the next day helped out Chads a lot, so I was pretty happy
that's
about
good.
That. That was
pro
good.
Chads.
We will, we'll have jingles and email when we return.
Yes, we have a jingle about the solstice.
About my car?
Yes.
That I'm trying to sell? I'm not actively trying to sell, but I would sell it.
Yes.
I'm certainly sorry. I got to put a battery in.
I believe
in
it's called Lament for the Solstice.
Fantastic. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Blue Apron read, and those of you who've listened to this podcast for a while know that I'm bullish on Blue Apron.
Very
I like Blue
so.
Apron a lot. I'm going to renew Blue Apron at some point soon. But not exactly now.
The code is waiting for you.
Yeah, so I can do this because I like Blue Apron. Blue Apron is a system of eating where you cook the food. They deliver the food to you. Every single thing they say is in the recipe is delivered to you. And then you chop it or slice it or braise it or mix it. And you make your own food. And it works pretty well. I mean, I've enjoyed it very much.
Bop it.
In terms of a...
Twist it.
Yes, you can bop it and twist it. In terms of affordability, for less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-portioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. In terms of variety, choose from a variety of new recipes each week or you let Blue Apron's culinary team surprise you. Recipes are not repeated within a year. You will not get bored. In terms of flexibility, you can customize your recipes each week based on your preferences. Blue Apron has several delivery options, so you can choose what fits your needs, and there's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. In terms of ease, each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients and can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. And in terms of guarantee, Blue Apron's freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook or they'll make it right. If they don't have one thing they're supposed to have, they give you a substitution and explain to you why the substitution works. It's really good. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/Tony K.
You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's Blue Apron, B-L-U-E-A-P-R-O-N, blueapron.com/TonyK. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
There's a Pontiac Solstice aroba, low miles and a tiny trunk. She sits at a beach house all alone and dreams about making a run. An orange man drives her to the country club and maybe to a Home Depot. The plate's expired, but the number's right. 8-8-4-4-0-0. Tonight, the solstice ride. She's gonna rev it up and lay 'em down. Get off of this sleepy avenue and drive like hell right out of town.
That's fabulous. That's fabulous. People recognize the Bruce Springsteen influence in that. That is Matthew Dillhoff in Springboro, Ohio. And that's just great. He also suggests we name Chad's four rascals. Might be working. Before we get into the mailbag, I want to say thanks, excuse me, to Michael Wilbon and Howard Feynman of the Huffington Post for coming on today. Also want to thank our sponsors today, Indochino, ZipRecruiter, and Blue Apron. Please support them the way they support our podcast. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. That's available to everybody, Michael, to leave reviews?
Yes, if they listen through iTunes, we're climbing the rankings.
That's very, very good. And if people want to submit music and buy gear?
Music, they can submit to jingles at tonykornheisershow.com. And if they are interested in a t-shirt or a sweatshirt or a coffee mug, they can go to shop.tonykornheisershow.com.
Chan sent me a picture of his coffee mug.
I got him that as a surprise.
Yeah, your father-in-law is now drinking coffee.
I'm buying gear from this shop.
That's fantastic. From Allison Fuller, greetings from the Pacific Northwest. I'm a longtime Little in Bellevue, Washington, having moved from D.C. a little over 3 years ago. Your show always keeps me feeling connected to the district. Congrats on the Chad's purchase. The most memorable first date of my life happened at Chadwick's, and not in a good way, but that's a story for another day. In any event, I had a strange Aldridge-like moment when you were talking about Edsel's. I grew up in a horrifically small town in Ohio, where my grandfather was one of the biggest Edsel collectors in the country, having owned approximately 63 running Edsels. He and my grandmother would spend summers driving their favorites around the United States, attending various Edsel meets. Occasionally, they would take one or more of us grandkids with them, and I have such fond memories from the 80s in exotic locations like Indianapolis and Louisville, attending large gathering of Edsel owners, average age 150. If you've not been to a Sheridan full of Edsel owners, you haven't lived. While both of my grandparents are long gone now, and most of the Edsels have also gone on to greener pastures or Texas, my father kept two of them. Ohio is a lot closer than Texas, and I'd love to picture you in one of Easy Ed's, and that's my grandpa Edsel's name, Old Edsel's. Thanks for hours of entertainment. Please don't ever retire. La Cheeserie Alley. That's very nice. I'd love to know more about that. Charlie Burtz in Springfield, Virginia. Here comes Tony's mailbag. Get your emails, alternative faxes, and your notes. So Trump had the biggest inaugural crowd in history. He had an independent study done to verify this, was corroborated by the firm of Nick Saban, Lance Armstrong, and Pete Rose. Malvern, Pennsylvania's Dan O'Connor, who always writes that I'm huge in Hagerstown, says, right. I'm sad to hear about the dean of DC Sports Radio being let go. Andy Poley had been a staple in the area for so many years. Speaking of staples, allow me to be a little self-indulgent here. Since Andy is gone, where in the hell am I supposed to get affordable orange juice? Now, Andy used to bring orange juice in the trunk of his car and sell it.
Yeah. That's what we suspected.
Yeah, that's what he
was hoarding the orange juice.
From Jason, last week when Ian Kahn talked about being on Dawson's Creek, I had my David Aldridge moment. He said that when he flew into the Wilmington airport, the first thing he saw was the prison. I've been in that prison. I don't know that we want to pursue this. I don't know.
Dodgy.
Hampton Nager in Dallas, Texas. I'm angry today. A Texas drinking buddy is visiting D.C. with her daughter this weekend and went to the National Zoo for the very first time. And the pandas were actually doing something. She's posting photos and saying how cute they are. They're rolling around. And look, there's video of them eating bamboo and looking at the camera. I lived in Washington for decades. I was a Fonz. That's a friend of the National Zoo. I am one of those, too. Have been. I've been to the zoo countless times, as have I, at all hours of the day and evening, as have I, and pandas don't do squad douche.
Right.
You are thankful if you get to see a panda butt sticking out of their little cave, looking like some muddy, bicolored ottoman. And for this first-timer to get to hang out and shoot interesting photos, she gets to panda bond with her child. She gets to have her friends coo and say how wonderful they must come and see the panda themselves. I hope a squirrel poops on her hat. This is true. I've gone to the panda thing 50 times.
Never seen
they
them.
Never do anything. You no. can't find them.
Never there.
They're laying somewhere you can't see them.
Exactly.
And now they did tricks.
Yeah.
For you know, with the jugglers and the clowns and all do tricks for you. Never understood that it ain't no good to let other people go out and get their kicks for you. Really? Robert Berg, the incomparable one in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You're probably wondering on a scale of 1 to 10 how much I love Audible.com. That is a sponsor here.
Right.
The answer would be 27. All littles should sign up today and take the free audiobook, even if you intend to cancel afterward. I recommend Sapiens for learning about the original six, no, not hockey teams, the six hominid species that competed to become apex predator of this planet. Ready Player One for fun dystopian fiction and Street Dreams and Hip Hop Barbershops by Brad Weiss for an oral transmission of hair grooming practices in Tanzania to a couplet rhyme scheme and a Parliament funkadelic groove. Brad is funkier than any other anthropology professor I've ever met. But seriously, Audible is money. Hard to understand sometimes, but always brilliant.
Ready Player One's a great book. If you're watching Stranger Things, give Ready Player One a chance.
There you go. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
But we don't have the chutzpah to do it.